Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law on the subject of status change. My name is Martin Michelson. I'll be your host for this evening's conference call brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, our advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes, just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, definitely get a little bit of entertainment, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However thorough and experienced as these thoughts and opinions might be, at the end of the day, they are still just people's thoughts and opinions, and it is always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, so on to the next subject. I'd like to take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. We look up in the upper right-hand corner, see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that and have a separate page come up with just two items on it, otherwise blank page. But these two items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. First on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. Rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you might find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process. Of course, mostly known for its national 85% win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. That's usually what it's popularly purchased for anyway, but not why it's up here. The reason that we've got it up here is once you've gone through the jurisdictionary a couple times and you get into the common law default, you'll see very quickly that it acts as a real-life homework assignment. Much of the core pillars and structure that you've learned about in jurisdictionary, you're now acting out in a real-life scenario with the common law default. And with the fact that it is usually ended up for being traffic scenarios, a lot of folks find it more palatable to have that be their first time. A little bit less riding on the line there with most traffic scenarios. And with such a high win rate, it just makes for a good place to start. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary at $250 and the common law default at $150. And so we encourage you to pick those up at your earliest convenience. All right, backing out of that, back to the homepage of Your Remedy. You'll see the login there and register. That reminds us, if you have not set up yourself up with an online account, please, again, do so at your convenience. Also very affordably priced at just $10 a month. Gives you full access, full membership to Your Remedies in the Law. A lot of wonderful educational materials there. Of course, full access to all of our calls, phone number and PIN. And, of course, every call is recorded, so you have years of archives that you have access to as well. So many different wonderful features there. And that is all within that membership at Your Remedies in the Law. Now, if that's not an option for you today, you do have freedomsradio.com, www.freedomsradio.com, where you can listen to these calls completely free of charge. You don't get the one-on-one with the information provider, but here's still a little bar there where you can type in a comment or question, click submit. We read those out over the air, so you still get some limited interaction. And so you don't ever have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, also here, most of you have probably seen now that map of the United States that is on every single website that we have. That is Grass Fire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Of course, it is 100% free of charge to use as well, completely free. You've got a very easy-to-use install wizard, walks you through the setup, your name, address, that sort of thing. You have a long list of topics to choose from. You can choose multiple topics. And then you have a radius to choose from, how far away from the home are we looking. When it's all said and done, it puts it together, much how a lot of folks would describe as a social media, but really nothing like a social media, very custom, very private, but how a lot of folks would describe a social media. The idea there is that you get on there one day and you say, well, this happened to me today. Maybe the first couple of people come back and say, well, I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably a truthful statement. I don't know how much that's going to help you with your educational process, though. Maybe the next person says, well, I'll tell you what I would do if I were similarly situated. I'd go down to my local county courthouse. If you didn't know, every county has a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library for you, the taxpayer. And I'd go down there and I'd look up these terms and maybe check out this YouTube video. And now we're starting to get somewhere. Maybe the next person says, those seem like great ideas. Also, I'd check out this educational package at this particular website. Well, you see where I'm going with this. The idea here is to put the power of communication, the power of education, back in the hands of the common man. And that's what we're trying to do here with Grassfire Communications. Also, here with your remedy, most of you have probably noticed that little blue box that pops up asking if you want to continue on or stay. The reason that we've done this is we're trying to get folks to explore. Too often we hear, I wish I'd known about this, or I wish I'd heard about that. And so we put that up there so folks would explore. The team at your remedies and the law has grown quite large, a lot of different information providers on a lot of different topics. And then all of your remedies and the law is just one of a dozen and a half websites that altogether make up Americans, Your Story, America. So there's quite a bit there for you to see. Odds are that most of you have probably not scratched the surface as to everything that's there. So we put that little box up there to remind folks in their leisure time to check out and see what else is available there at Americans, Your Story, America. Of course, if you do have a question on whether we might have an information provider that could assist you with your particular situation, you can always get a hold of us directly. You can email mm@yourremediesandthelaw.com. Or, of course, you can always call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250. And somebody will be back with you as quickly as possible. All right, this next portion is called your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. When you come aboard with an information provider here at your Remedies and the Law, you're doing just that. You're coming aboard directly with that information provider. All these information providers, these team members, pay for advertising at your Remedy. And this would be a cost to that info provider along with any other costs associated with your particular educational process or whatever it is that you're entertaining there. That brings us to a more specific point. What is the refund policy or the credit policy at your Remedies and the Law? Well, there is none. If that was going to be a conversation that would need to be had, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. And then even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. Again, you are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular information provider's time or process. All right. Lastly, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right. Well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. Without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn the call over at this time to Mr. Edward, and he will introduce our speaker for this evening.
Well, thank you so very much, Martin. I appreciate that. I've got some great news for you all. If you've been on the calls the last couple of nights, you know that I've shared with you that tomorrow Brother John is not going to be with us as a speaker, and that we may be relying upon the recording to keep you all entertained. However, I did learn about an hour ago that Johnny Ringo goes by Johnny Ringo. Johnny Ringo is the lead investigator for the late Tony Davis on Title 18. So Johnny Ringo will be stepping in tomorrow night to share with us not only Title 18, the background to it, but two updates since the last time he spoke that should be of very, very great and important interest to you. So I just want to let everybody know, and I'll be repeating this when we get to the Q&A later on tonight, so bear with me for that. Tonight I thought that while we wait for GW to show up, and Martin, do let me know, either pop me up on Skype or just interrupt me, that GW is here, and be loud enough if you interrupt me, because I think I missed you the last time, and I'll turn the call over to him then. But I thought tonight that I'd talk to you about the American Bar Association. And when you hear what I've got to say on that, which is basically I'm repeating comments by the author is Augustus Blackstone, you're going to understand why it's so very, very, very important that, A, you correct your status, which is what tonight's call is about, and, B, you utilize yourself in the courtroom. Get rid of this garbage in your head that says, well, I just can't even possibly consider defending myself in the court. What's that? Somebody that defends himself has a fool for an attorney or something? Anyways, point being, listen to what's stacked up against you, how it's stacked up, and why. The American Bar Association, its alter state egos, like here in Florida, the Florida Bar Association, has, for all intents and purposes, taken over our entire federal government, state government, and local governments. The legislative branch follows the advice of their bar members as advisors in constructing the statutes. The executive branch does the same in the enforcement of those statutes, and the judicial branch is literally a closed union shop in that regard. You can't be a judge unless you're a bar member, and you can't practice in their courts unless you're a bar member. Well, up until recently, anyways, where Brother John will share with you how he's managed to slip in. The term BAR, B-A-R, is an acronym, or is believed to be an acronym, for British Accredited Registry. These snakes in the grass are, in fact, working for the Crown of England. And that is why the gold fringe flags are in the courtroom. It signifies Admiralty jurisdiction, which is maritime law, which is another way of saying British jurisdiction, as England is a maritime nation. And when you cross the bar in a courtroom, you are literally entering a British colonial forum. There are over 30 grievances listed against King George III of England in the Declaration of Independence of 1776. Nearly all of them are applicable today against the Crown of England by way of the Bar Association. If you don't have a copy, get one and read it. Each grievance therein begins with he, in reference to King George III. As you read through these grievances, mentally supplant the pronoun he with Bar Association on behalf of the Crown of England. And you'll see exactly what I mean. The root term for attorney originates in Sanskrit, the oldest known language of the world, and its original meaning was to turn or to twist. And that meaning carried forward largely unaltered into the English language. The letter A, beginning attorney, when used as a word, is defined as an indefinite article. And when used as a prefix, it equates with the word one, which is an indefinite article, which modifies the base word torn, a torn, accordingly, and as does the suffix E, E-Y. The extra T is added to separate two vowels for proper pronunciation in accordance to the rules of English grammar. Thus, attorney, quite literally means one who turns something. This takes on an added meaning when you understand that the legal profession in England has a number of titles, that is, jobs descriptions. They have the esquire, the barrister, the solicitor, the counselor, the attorney, and so forth. And each one has a specific function within their monarchical system. An English attorney's function is to see that all titles and estates properly turn over to the legitimate heirs. The closest equivalent to that function in this country would be an attorney who specializes in probate law. It is no accident that the generic term used to describe a practitioner of law in this country is attorney. As an agent for the Crown of England, their function is to turn the sovereignty and the wealth of this country back over to the Crown of England. And they have really just about succeeded in it. The American Bar Association was first organized in 1878. Just what, a decade or so after the Civil War? Its purposes were to, quote, promote the administration of justice, to advance jurisprudence, to uphold professional honor, and to encourage social intercourse among lawyers, end quote. Gerald Auerbach, Unequal Justice, Lawyers and Social Change in Modern America, 1976. That's where that quote came out of. That's who found it. The Federal Bar Association was officially incorporated by the Congress in 1954, Public Law 662, Chapter 911. Ooh, isn't that odd? I have not yet been able to verify with absolute certainty that the bar is indeed an acronym for British Accredited Registry. According to Augustus Blackstone, the tie-in to the American Bar Association is the Inns of Court. The American Revolution swept away a bar in the English sense of an upper branch of this profession, possessing certain special privileges by virtue of its connection with the Inns of Court. Present-day law schools in the United States, 928, by Alfred Reed. That's where we get that information from. So I'm citing sources so that you don't think that I'm just making this stuff up. This was printed out in 1928. However, the British Inns of Courts eventually planted its roots on American soil. The following quote was taken from the American Inns of Courts website, quote, "The American Inns of Courts adopted the traditional English model of legal apprenticeship and modified it to fit the particular needs of the American legal system," end quote. So just what is the English model today? Well, here's what Black's Law Dictionary, 6th edition, defines Inns of Court. Quote, "These are certain private, unincorporated associations in the nature of a collegian houses located in London and invested with the exclusive privilege of calling people to the bar, that is, conferring the rank or degree of barrister. They were founded probably about the beginning of the 14th century. The principal inns of court are the Inner Temple, the Middle Temple, Lincoln's Inn, and Gray's Inn. The two former originally belonged to the Knights Templar." The key question that Mr. Blackstone asks regarding the Inns of Court is, well, whose court is it? And the answer he gives is, of course, the Crown of England. Even today in England, admission to an inn is required before registration on the bar vocational course. The Knights Templar is a secret society. They were the first international bankers. Today, the Knights Templar is also part of another secret society, Freemasonry. And notice the use of the word degree in the Inns of Court's definition that was given a moment ago. The word degree is a secret society term which refers to the level in which the initiate has risen. The initiate must first take, quote, blood oaths, end quote, in order to progress to higher levels of the initiation. A friend of mine who is a 32nd degree Shriner, Freemason, left the secret society because the blood oaths became unconscionable and repulsive to him. The blood oaths themselves imply or state that the initiate will suffer a most horrible death if he reveals the secrets of the lodge. Some men have reported before required to drink blood from a skull as part of a Masonic initiation. Many judges and lawyers are Freemasons. In fact, a very large number of civil servants, from judges to presidents, are members of a secret society such as the Skull and Bones or the Knights of Malta and Freemasonry. Can we trust judges and lawyers who are Freemasons? according to the Handbook of Masonry by the author Ronanan, page 183, quote, "You must conceal all the crimes of your brother Mason. You should be summoned as a witness against a brother Mason. Be always certain to shield him. It may be perjury due to this, it is true, but you're keeping your obligations," end quote. The following is the blood oath that Shriners take, quote, "In willful violation whereof may I incur the fearful penalty of having my eyeballs pierced to through center with a three-edged blade, my feet flayed and forced to walk the hot sands upon the sterile shores of the Red Sea until the flaming sun shall strike me with a livid plague, and may Allah, the God of Arab, Muslim, and Muhammad, the God of our fathers, support me to the entire fulfillment of the same," end quote. Augustus Blackstone suggests that the sovereignty and the wealth of America is being turned back to the Crown of England through admiralty jurisdiction. Well, this is not so far-fetched as it may sound. In the early 50s, Norman Dodd was the director of research for a congressional investigation into the tax-exempt Rockefeller, Ford, and Carnegie foundations. What he discovered was that there were foundations that were working together to control the educational system of America, so that Americans would be indoctrinated into the principles of collectivism as opposed to the principles in the original United States Constitution and Declaration of Independence. Furthermore, here is what Mr. Dodd stated about Mr. Carnegie. Quote, "He publicly declared and steadfast interest was to counteract the Department of the Colonies from Great Britain. He was devoted just to putting the pieces back together again," end quote. Mr. Dodd indicated that it was the bankers and lawyers who were making this possible. Today, the courts in America do in fact display a gold fringe admiralty flag. However, the judges and prosecutors of the Bar Association always refuse to reveal the jurisdiction when asked. Jurisdiction is a secret that they do not want people to know about. This means that the Bar Association is, in fact, a secret society. On a few occasions, judges have lied about their secret jurisdictions by stating that the court was under, quote, statutory jurisdiction. Reading the Washington State Bar Association article or the Whitman County corruption article for details, the imposition of admiralty jurisdiction on land was one of the primary grievances that the colonists had against King George. The first paragraph of the Declaration and Resolves of the First Continental Congress of October 14, 1774 pretty much sums it all up. Quote, "Whereas, since the close of the last war, the British Parliament, claiming a power of right to bind the people of America by statutes in all cases whatsoever, hath, in some acts, expressly imposed taxes on them, and in others under previous and various pretenses, but in fact, for the purpose of raising a revenue, have imposed rates and duties payable in these colonies, established a board of commissioners with unconstitutional powers, and extended the jurisdiction of the courts of admiralty, not only for collecting the said duties, but for the trial of causes merely arising within the body of a county," end quote. Let's follow the money. The Rothschilds and the Bank of England, along with the London banking houses, ultimately control the Federal Reserve banks in America through their stockholdings of bank stock and their subsidiary firms in New York. As Alan Greenspan stated in London on September 25, 2002, quote, "The tie between the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve was cemented during the 1920s, end quote. Actually, that tie was formed even before the Federal Reserve Act was fraudulently passed in 1913. It's also interesting to note that former President George Bush Sr. was knighted by the Queen of England. The Founding Fathers prohibited such titles of nobility. The question remains, who was George Bush actually serving when he was president? We the people or the British Empire? It was George Bush Sr. who first publicly coined the expression New World Order. Both George Bush Jr. and George Bush Sr. are members of the infamous Skull and Bones Secret Society, otherwise known as, quote, the order, end quote, which originally came from Germany. Adolf Hitler wrote My New Order after writing Mein Kampf. George Bush's father, Prescott Bush, was also a Skull and Bones member, along with Percy Rockefeller and Bush family business partners, the Harrimans. The symbol is, in fact, a skull and crossbones, the symbol for drugs, poison, piracy, death, and the Nazis' Death's Head Battalion. According to Leonard I'm just about finished up. I got one more paragraph here. According to Dr. Leonard Horowitz, Prescott Bush joined John D. Rockefeller and the British royal family in sponsoring the eugenics initiative that gave rise to Hitler's racial hygiene programs. Prescott Bush was found guilty of trading with the enemy, the Nazis, during World War II. According to court records, the Rockefeller family and their Standard Oil Company supported Hitler more than they did the Allies during World War II. In fact, one judge declared that Mr. Rockefeller was guilty of treason. Dr. Gary Glum has also documented the insidious eugenics programs to create the so-called superior race, which were initially sponsored not by Adolf Hitler, but by the American elite, that is to say Rockefeller, Carnegie, Harriman, Morgan, DuPont, Kellogg, and the Bush families. So, where'd it go? The Rockefeller family, along with their lawyer friend John and Alan Dulles, created the United Nations for the purpose of establishing a world government. Alan Dulles became head of the CIA, as did George Bush. George Bush Sr. is an active, or was an active participant, in the CIA's MKUltra mind control programs. On February 1, 1992, George Bush Sr. addressed the General Assembly of the United Nations and stated, quote, "It is the sacred principles enshrined in the United Nations Charter to which the American people will henceforth pledge their allegiance," end quote. Patriotic Americans view Bush's statement as treasonous. George Bush also stood before the United States Congress and stated that the, quote, "New World Order," end quote, is the, quote, "rule of law," end quote. Perhaps what he meant to say was the rule of lawyers, because it is the lawyers and judges in America who are, in fact, implementing the New World Order through fraud. However, not all lawyers are aware of this ultimate plan of the global elite. This information given is just tidbits to an inspiring researcher to conduct his own research in the global elitist families and their insidious plans for totalitarian world government and the creation of a super race. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to GW.
All right. Well, it's an interesting introduction there for especially newbies. Especially newbies that might have even thought that the Bush family were good people,
right,
who have our best intentions in mind, you know?
Right.
Boy, that was a wake-up call for me back in the 80s when I started really studying the Bushes, and then I was so depressed. I was so depressed when George Bush got elected. And I was trying to tell people, and the people at my own church, you know, they're like, "Oh no, he's a good man. He says he's a Christian." You know, I remember those days. Just going, "What? You kidding?" Anyway, now we're in an environment where people are super eager to learn these things, and a lot of them are, you know, freaking out. Some of them still in the dark. You know, they probably will never want to come out of their cocoon. But at least the people on this call are searching for truth, and wherever it hits them, there looks like they're going to do their due diligence. So, of course, this call is all about correcting your status with the one department in the land that's called the U.S. State Department, which has jurisdiction over the issuance of passports and passport cards, and has the ultimate authority to, well, not so much determine as put down in their records how you have determined yourself. And that's what we want to help you with and help you understand. There's a lot of different gurus, a lot of different organizations out there, and there's more of them coming online all the time. Some of it's kind of unfortunate because just like with social media, okay, which, you know, you have Facebook, there's the number one social media application in 2004 with LifeLog that was being funded, over $100 million was put into LifeLog, which the CIA and the DARPA put together, try to get people to give up all their information and put it online with them. And they could never get any traction. They knew they couldn't get any traction. And just by coincidence, this guy named Mark Zuckerberg, the day that Congress allowed the program to be shut down in 2004, that exact day, this is coincidence, Facebook was launched. And, of course, if you can't see through the rose-colored glasses here, LifeLog was developed. They just found a great patsy for it and put a narrative together, and people just went and put all their information, started using Facebook like crazy. A DARPA, you know, deep state project with the CIA to get all the information. Well, over and over again, through all your, you know, different social medias, your news, the MSN, as we call it, CNN, ABC, NBC, and CBS, you're never going to get anything that really truthful from those media sources on, especially things that have to do with your freedom, whether it be your health freedom, your liberty in society as a citizen, okay, or your spiritual freedom. You're never really going to hear it on the news because it's not to their advantage to tell you how to truly be free. And so that's why alternative medias and access points like this type of social media that Michael Edwards has created and been behind for practically, 20, 25 years now? These are the places that people go. Just like it says in Scripture, okay, the Holy Bible, it says the path that leads to destruction is wide and many that follow. And it says the path that leads to life, okay, that's the path that we're trying to be on as believers in our Father, God, and His Son, Jesus Christ. That path, it says, to the contrary, is narrow and few who find it. I mean, that's in Scripture. And that's something our Yeshua, you know, told us. And that's a direct quote from him, that path is narrow and few who find it. So congratulate yourself that you're on this call if you're new, and that you're on the narrow path right now, because we have been helping a lot of people. I've been doing this ever since March of 2008 is when I corrected my status and standing with the U.S. State Department. And then I also noticed the Treasury, IRS. But there are a lot of misguides out there, and there's a number of different organizations that are conflating a lot of issues, even though they, some of them might be true. They're just conflating a lot of issues and getting so wrapped up in their process that a lot of people get so exhausted they never even get it done. Whereas the process that we lead you through and help you to get done is a very fast process, actually. It could be done very fast, and the correction part can be done very fast, but the mindset training and the understanding might take a little longer to really get it into your soul, get it into your psyche, and understand how to operate once you have corrected your status on paper and, you know, given it to one of the ultimate agencies out there that can categorize you as an American national and put your status that separates you from the average sheep, which they want to take to the shearers, as a U.S. citizen or United States citizen. So with that said, you know, we do it through the process of affidavits, and we also do it by helping people to get an appointment with the U.S. State Department and get their brand new passport and passport card. There's no way to correct an existing passport or passport card. It just, oops. Hope I didn't sit in here doing the wrong thing on my phone. All right, hopefully Michael, can you still hear me? Or Martin?
I hear you fine. I hear you fine.
Okay, good.
I had that mute. I always mute.
All right. Okay. I was pressing the buttons there. I didn't know if I cut myself off. So I think at this point, Martin, we can open it up for questions and answers if people are so disposed and have some dialogue.
All right, star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. Star 2 to raise your hand at this time. Or if you're listening on the Freedoms Radio side, type your questions in the question bar at this time and click submit.
While that's waiting to populate, Martin, let me again repeat the news that I gave earlier on the call. There were much, much fewer people at the time. It seems like the point is that tomorrow night, as I had said to you on the last couple of calls, that John will not be with us tomorrow night. He actually has buried his father today, and that tomorrow he will be burying his lifelong best friend, who died a couple of days after his father had died. So he will not be on tomorrow night's call. The good news is I reached out to Johnny Ringo, and if you are old timers here on this call, you know that Johnny Ringo is the pseudonym for the gentleman that was the lead investigator for the late Tony Davis on Title 18. And tomorrow night he will re-present the historical foundations to Title 18. It's fraud. It's actual fraud. And then he's going to give you an update of its recent applications and investigations by a couple of courts that he appeared as an expert witness in. So you're going to want to hear this. You know, it's like a woven fabric where you're pulling at this thread and then you pull that thread out. And, well, you know, there's getting some shiny spots here now on Title 18. At some places it's actually threadbare. So you're going to want to be on tomorrow night's call for sure. Thank you, Martin. Back to you.
All right. Well, I don't see anything popping up, so we're going to have a pretty short call here tonight if we don't have any questions.
Well, if there's no questions, I'm going to continue with the next portion of what I was talking about, and I think that GW might like to hear this as well. And it's going to further cement in your mind why you would want to learn the things that we're talking about here, and how the Bar Association has so, and the whole system of jurisprudence has been put in place to deceive you and to milk you for all you're worth. So here's some things that your attorney does not tell you. You hired an attorney. I hope you've researched whose side he or she is on. I know that you've spoken to, I know they have spoken to you, and that they were so nice and considerate, and they only charged you $60 for a consultation. Well, I'm here to give you some bad news. What I'm about to tell you is only a fraction of the deceit your attorney is involved with. For starters, did you know that your attorney's first duty is to the court and not to you? Well, your attorney's first duty is to the courts. You say you don't believe it? Well, look up these cases. State versus Stokes, 243 Northwest 2nd, 372. Harrison versus State, 2311 Indiana, 147. It's sad but true, and there are many other cases which state the same thing that these cases state. It's also my duty to inform you that when you hire an attorney, you then become a ward of the court. In Spliker versus Henkin, 188 F. 2nd, 35, it says so. So now that you have hired an attorney and you are a ward of the court, let me give you some real bad news. What is a ward of a court? It's either a person of unsound mind or an infant. Reference Davis's Committee versus Loney, 290 Kentucky 644, 162 Southwest 2nd, 189 and 90. And now that you've deemed yourself insane, I guess your testimony means nothing. That attorney does not seem so honest now, does he? So these are some of the things that I wanted to share with you tonight, and thank you for the opportunity. What you'll learn by operating through the team, GW is a member of the team, John, Bernie, Mr. Slevin, someone that you rarely talk to is or hear about is Chris Ann. These are the primary members of the team, the A-team, if you would. And behind the A-team is the B-team, which is two, sometimes three people who are mentored by the A-team in their particular fields so that we have a continuity of process of maintaining our relationships with you. I refer to it as the 100-year plan, so that when I draw my last breath, there is somebody already trained or in training to take my place. You're talking to the other host here, Martin. You have GW. I don't know if GW has anyone in place, but he's been very kind to share with us the product. And if something were to happen to GW, we could still continue offering his services. In fact, GW, I need to talk with you about that, because there's people in your lineage, if you would, that I need to be aware of for that purpose, if that happens. And it goes on with John. Huh?
If I can find him on this issue, okay. Correct, you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to find somebody.
All right. Well, anyways, point being is that we're here to serve not just today, but for the next 100 years. And not for the next 100 years, but this is a primary established pattern that my replacements, our replacements, will have the same duty to do, to have somebody that they mentor and train to come in. So we got that going there. Anybody else, press star 2 on your keypad. Otherwise, we're going to say goodnight early, and that's not any good. We've got a lot of people tonight. Good group with us tonight. All right. Oh, go ahead, Martin. Martin, you with us?
Yes. Ed, you've been unmuted, sir.
Oh, I have.
You have?
Anyways, I was going to say, one of you guys mentioned already about there's been a whole lot of new people doing teaching the American national status. And there are. I'm seeing people pop up all over YouTube now and other places making websites, et cetera, et cetera. And I'll say this. I'm here, and I guess I got here la-di-da by way of Michael, probably. And I've been hanging out over here since when? Michael, when did I start listening to all y'all? Back in 2005, was it? Somewhere in there?
Yeah, I'd say that. Even before. No, even before. No,
yeah,
2000.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I was helping moderate Merlin's Methods for a while.
I don't
forget what that was.
David Merlin, yeah.
I've seen a lot of stuff. I've bought a lot of stuff off of other people. And there was one guy came from out west. I can't remember their name. They taught a process based on making sure they had their oath of office and making sure any officer of any government here in America had an oath of office. And if they don't, well, then they're pretending to be an officer of the government, which is a big hefty duty fine and jail time, if I remember correctly. And if they do, chances are pretty high that they're violating their oath of office. And he got taken down. He started teaching. Fred, their name was Fred and Nina. I can't remember their last name. They were from the Southwest, though. Real good people. And what they started teaching, ways to get money that were to buy cars, et cetera, et cetera. And they kind of bumped out of the whole thing, getting disappointed with people, if I read them right. They got disappointed with how avaricious people were in pursuing that and not worrying about what they were causing. And then I heard some organization of government got a warrant for them and searched their property and did a strip search on one of their daughters, and that was enough for them. But other people too, all along the way, have taught a variety of commercial methods, and almost all of them have gone to jail, whether they were right or wrong. They went to jail, or they were outright wrong and just got denied. And people doing it, they would win for a while, and then they would lose, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that, Michael, you pursued stuff that, like right now. And this is, I don't read anyone else making this process any easier. And they all want to include every particular contract. I just finished downloading the guy that GW mentioned a few weeks ago. Effing this, effing that, and going on and on and on. And I just, his process, he actually calls it getting rid of all the contracts. And I don't understand, if the contracts are fraud, what is there to get rid of? But one thing after another. But you've been safe all along. I don't know whether you've tendered any, or whether you've repelled any search warrants or squashed anything coming at you in the mails or anything like that. But I don't, I'm just wanting to say that nobody's ever, no one's ever come after me over doing something that you were recommending or one of your teachers, one of your information providers was recommending. End of story. This is safe. That's what I'm trying to say. This is safe. It's not without problems, but it's safe. End of story. Just wanted to say that.
Yeah, I want to recognize what you said by just publicly claiming or stating, asserting, whatever, that I have been exceedingly blessed, period. I've been exceedingly blessed by the Most High. And everything that His protection, His hedge of protection has always been around me. For those of you that don't know, at one time, I was on top of the mountain, if you would, having climbed there, quote, all by myself, you know, by my bootstraps, arrogant in my accomplishments, only to have everything taken away from me. And I make the statement in a writing that I've published that said, what happened to me, I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, but I might on my best friend. And what I mean by that is that all these circumstances, these on the appearance of negative circumstances that enveloped me and my family, it was for the single purpose of taking me down to a place where there was nothing that I could do about it. I couldn't do shite. And it was that point when I turned to the Almighty One and I turned my life over to Him. I said, I can't do it. You know, either you have to step in or I have to step out. I can't do this anymore. And He stepped in. He impressed upon someone to take profits that they had made from their business venture and give me a quarter of it, a third of it, something, a tremendous amount of money that took me from living on the street, literally, at that time, and put me into a place where I could get something done. Now, this is insane what this gentleman did, because it's nothing that anyone would do in their right mind as living in the flesh. The only way this came about was by the grace of the Almighty One. And it was that turning point that took me from sleeping on cardboard boxes that I broke down to lay on so that keep the cold and the dampness off of me that I slept on, and put me to a place where I could rejoin with my wife, because we had separated, not domestically separated, but there was a place that provided her comfort, a roof over their head. That was all they provided, was a roof over their head, but they at least provided a roof over her head. And it was at that turning point that I was able to begin fighting back. And it was at that time that I met Richard Cornforth. I had the opportunity to have a conversation with him after I attended. He comped me an opportunity to join one of his seminars, and I shared with him what I would do where I was similarly situated as far as marketing what he was doing. Evidently, he was impressed sufficiently where he asked me, invited me to take over that responsibility. And that was the beginning of me getting back to work. Had nothing to do with my 25 years as a manufacturing, wholesale, retail jeweler. Had nothing to do with that at all. But the things that I learned in marketing myself for the 25 years was what I employed for Mr. Cornforth. And in fact, it was Mr. Cornforth, Richard Cornforth, that said in a one of his conferences that I had assembled, put together, wherein he said, quote, "Your remedy is in the law." I liked it so much, I bought the domain name, www.yourremedyisinthelaw, which is what I've devoted to Brother John, tomorrow night's call through. There have been so many impossible things that have come about since that time that I just smile and say, thank you, Father, because that's the only source, possible source of these things. And he has been very, very kind to me, enabling me to be kind to others, which I do when I can. And I just wanted to publicly share that. I don't know why I got off on that course, and I apologize. Anyways, back to you, Martin.
All right. Let's see. Next up, we've got Charlie in Oklahoma. Go ahead, Charlie.
Yep. Okay. Just as I clicked the star two or whatever, just as I think it was Ed got on, because you had said, Michael, that you were going to continue teaching us about the bar, et cetera. But then you said, well, we'll make it a short call. And I was just going to say, wait. But the call seems to be filling up, and you may not have time to do that, but I was just going to say I'm one who was looking forward to hearing more. So that's all I really had to say. And thank you for the background.
Sure.
All right. Thank you so much. And now we've got Elmer in Nevada. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening, guys.
I love this guy.
My kind of guy,
Elmer.
I'm headed overseas next weekend, so I'm going to find out how the passport, and I'll report on what I run into or don't run into on the way over and back.
Good.
Awesome. That's great.
Leaving Spain on Sunday morning, so I'll be over there by Monday morning, and I'll spend a week over there and come back the following Sunday. So I'll let you know how it all goes.
Looking forward to hearing it.
Good deal.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. We've got your Kirk. Get you unmuted there. Go ahead, Kirk.
I just wanted to make a comment. I read in Anna von Ritzinger puts out these deals. I don't know how accurate she is, but she, you were talking about attorneys and what they do and so on and so forth. And what she had written was that the Bar Association is a corporation that was registered or whatever it is in Puerto Rico. And it has written down on their application the reason for their requesting a corporation was for theater and entertainment. Supposedly that's written down in their corporation application.
Did you ever find it entertaining?
No, I don't find them entertaining.
Me either. They failed on that mission.
I'm like Bernie. I'm an equal opportunity despiser when it comes to attorneys and politicians.
Yeah, I've got to agree. You know, I have tried to educate and interface with attorneys, and it's really tough. Even when
you break through, even when you, I see, you know, and I love it, you know, because when you see the lights turning on and you see the wheels spinning and they're asking all the right questions and then they're making the statements like, oh my God, we never learned this in law school. They never told us any about this. You know, and you bring up the cases, Supreme Court cases, appellate court cases. Even after that, I've never had a single attorney ever, you know, say, I want to get this done. They're just, they're too sheep dipped, okay? Meaning they come into it, they might have come into it with a real great attitude and a great heart and the right motives, but as they go through it, they realize the system that they're in is somewhat corrupt, if not all the way corrupt, and they hang on to the paycheck. They hang on to the license. They don't want to do anything for any reason that would set them against the bar. Now, you hear about these attorneys every once in a while. And by the way, I've got one that's coming in on board here. He was an attorney, and he's actually now a priest with the Orthodox, Greek Orthodox church. But he's very different because he got woken up. He woke up to everything that's going on within the, you know, after he passed the bar and became an attorney, he's like, I can't do this. And then he went into ministry. Became priest, has his own parish, and he, through another organization that I had been working with, trying to educate them on a number of things, he was referred to me, and now he wants to eventually dump the 501c3 that they try to, you know, he realizes that it's definitely not the thing to operate with. And, of course, he's putting together his corporation, Soul, his charitable religious trust right now. So, but he's also looking at the, and wants to talk about more about the status process. But that's an attorney that's an odd situation because once they learn about it and they have a heart and they have a conscience, then they do something. They either get out of it or they write books about it. Like the one attorney that wrote the book that you can find on Amazon it's called Three Felonies a Day. I forget the gentleman that wrote the book. He was an attorney. And he was fought like crazy against publishing that book and releasing it. And it was the Bar Association that fought him. And he won two court cases against the Bar Association of all things. He won two cases, and then he was allowed to publish his book. And the subject of the book was they've made the law so complicated, and they've made it so, you know, with so much turgidity and so much ambiguity that people are, that the average person, he says, is actually committing about three felonies a day in just their daily routines. And he says that's what they wanted. That was their goal. And he exposed it, and of course lots of people have read that book. I read it a long time ago. And you know, but that's the kind of person or an attorney that will accept this kind of information. They show it. There's fruit in their life that they don't want anything to do with that system anymore, and they would, you know, they'll turn their back on it, which is very honorable and respectful. But the problem is, for the most part, that you know, attorneys for on the average make, you know, quite a little bit more than the average pay for the average worker in America. And it just keeps them just right there. You know, it just keeps them subservient to that system. so that they don't want to rock the boat. And that's the problem you face with you're trying to educate an attorney. Anyway, that's my short spiel. Hopefully it was short.
Martin?
All right, does that take care of you? Yep.
Yes, I think so. So, in other words, an attorney, if he changes his mind and gets out of the bar, then he either becomes a priest or a lawyer, right? Isn't there a difference between a lawyer and an attorney? A lawyer, an attorney twists things around.
Yeah. I won't argue with it. Let's put it that way. I won't argue with that.
Yeah, the proper declination for someone like John that would normally be on tomorrow night would be legal counsel or lawful counsel.
Okay.
And you stay away from the term. You could say that he is a lawyer because he holds a Juris Doctorate in law. He's just not a member of the bar. So. He would technically and lawfully be a lawyer. Because the ignorance of the people involved, i.e. members of the bar, they believe that the term lawyer and attorney are synonymous and mean the same thing. And that's not correct. So we stick with, lawful counsel or legal counsel. And in fact, one of his students had a win today, a short win, I call it, because they were going to have a trial today and we were able to get it postponed. And that postponement is going to enable John to finish writing. His whole life got screwed up about 10 days ago with the death of his father and stuff, you know, all that was going on. So it gives him now the time to come back and finish his work on the criminal complaints or federal civil complaints of deprivation of rights under color of law that are going to be forthcoming very, very soon against the players involved. So it all works out nicely. And also today on another student, the same thing, got a case set out for next year now. So again, John is like 80% done with both of these pleadings to file in federal court these complaints under Title 42, 1983. So all is moving well. And in another instance with Mr. T, I think everyone on the call is familiar with Mr. T's issues that John covers every week that he's on the call. He is actually going to step in. John is going to step in and sue the judge for deprivation of rights under color of law for failing to allow him to be Sixth Amendment counsel. It's going to be fun. This is very exciting times. All excited about it. This is the way we fight. I prefer to fight for the restoration of our constitutional republic. I do not want to exercise the opportunities our Founding Fathers gave to belligerently reduce our cause. I don't want to do that if we can help it. Anyways, back to you, Martin. Or not. Kirk, anything else?
No, thanks for that, Michael.
GW, any closing comments?
I was unmuted. No, I don't have any closing comments here. Just good talk all the way around.
Great, thank you. I want to again remind everyone to come tomorrow night. John will not be here, but we're going to have the wonderful Johnny Ringo, the lead investigator for the late Tony Davis, to share with us not only the foundations of the Title 18 fraud, but recent very recent court cases that he's been involved with, giving expert testimony that have, well, just come back tomorrow night and we'll see what that's all about. Thank you for joining us. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well. My computer froze.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.